All right. Thank you very much. That was quite an introduction there. You know, we should have Visitor Sunday more often. So for this morning, again, from my side as well, welcome so much. Welcome very much to all the visitors. It's great having you guys with us. And alongside what Leonard has already said, I trust that you guys will have really just enjoyed time and the time with us here. But I thought for this morning, what I'm going to do is, instead of just going through kind of an orthodox or traditional sermon, I'm going to tell you guys my story. The reason why I'm going to do that is not that I think my story is so much more unique than most of the people's stories in here that in some ways have had meeting with God that have transformed and changed their lives. But I think when we tell a story, sometimes there's just things that people can identify just so much easier with than what we just, you know, give a sermon. And so I trust that even if I tell my story, which is obviously my story, and it's unique to me and to how things worked out with me, that there will be things that you, as you listen to it, that you would feel like it's different, but somewhere there's something similar in my experience of life. All right. So I'll tell you just a little bit of my background, where I grew up. I actually had, as many people in South Africa that grew up in a nice Afrikaner home, I had good parents. I still have good parents. I grew up in a nice traditional Christian home. But I think by the time of about the age of 11, I realized something in myself that you guys won't believe what I realized. I realized that I want to be happy. Really, it's just, I mean, this, I know this is really profound, but I just want to be happy. And guess what, you know, I'm gonna try and dare. I don't want to just put you in a box and say that you're something that you're not. But I think you also. If you're honest, just want to be happy, all right? And so I kind of looked around and see, look, I'm all right. I mean, things are all right, but I feel like I can be more happy in life, you know. And so I looked, trying to look around and see where would things happen for me so that I can be more happy. And like I said, my parents was very devoted to the church, and so I would go with them to church. And there was something that I realized in the church as I went there every Sunday. And I'm just very honest with you guys, as I kind of processed my world around me, I looked around there and I go like, these people, to be really honest, do not seem so happy. And even though I was taught that it's a good thing to do and go there, I didn't seem to look around me and see, here is the place of happiness, if you want to say it in that many words. I didn't see it. And so I kind of, even though whatever they teach you in front of how things work, I made up from what I saw, I made up a certain theology or certain understanding of how it works in regards to God. And that's why I put God aside. But my understanding of things was something like this. You live a really boring life, and then God rewards you with heaven. All right? So you just do basically nothing. You know, you do what all the unhappy people do, and then you can go to heaven. On the other side, you can go for it and really have as much fun as you can possibly think of. Unfortunately, your reward will be hell. And so to be really honest, heaven was not the most attractive thing for me, simply because it was full of Christians, you know? But I was definitely scared. I was scared of hell. I was as scared as hell for hell, all right? And so I don't want to go to hell. And so what I kind of thought at a young age, again, just trying to process life, was I'm going to go for it. Try and have as much fun as possible. And try and actually find joy out there. And then try and get my timing right. And just before the hammer falls, I'm going to turn to God so that I can somehow have the best of both worlds, okay? And so by the age of 12, 13, my pursuit after happiness started. And so we are all different than what rocks your boat. I'm telling you what rocked my boat. I just wanted to be popular. I just wanted to be the guy. I wanted to be in and that type of thing. So I kind of looked around and I looked, who is the really cool crowd? And I kind of set my gaze for the social ladder, to climb it up and to be at the top, be as cool as can be around. Now, still today, my wife, whenever I told her, so I only met my wife at the age of 25, 26. She will not believe that I was cool at school. She says there's no ways that I was cool. But I mean, at least in my world, I thought I was pretty cool. And so I said the guys kind of want to be friends with the guys that I thought was the coolest guys around. And with that, obviously do what the coolest guys around do. And so I remember reaching my goal at some stage, thinking this is the ultimate of climbing the ladder of joy. And so I found myself then finally with this group of friends, these guys that I felt like I'm really on top of the food chain in regards to coolness. I'm doing whatever other people are doing to be there. And it was one of these parties, and I was just really having a good time, seeing, looking around me, and I'm thinking by myself, this is it. This is it. This is it. You know, it was great, it was good, but it was just something. I mean, if I'd be honest, if people have asked me, have you arrived? I would not have been able to say that. It was good, it was great, but it just left me somehow still not quite what I was expecting it would offer me. And so, you know, what the problem is when you start, when you're on top of the coolest guy in school, you know, the problem is you need to stay on top. And so you need to become creative in how to stay on top, you know. You need to do and dare what nobody else dares to do, all right. And so in my pursuit of staying on top of the social ladder, I obviously had to become more and more creative. And I started getting more and more involved in stuff that's probably, well, not probably, wasn't good, all right? So I remember, I think in my grade 10 or my grade 11 year, probably I bunked more school days than actually being at school. I found a way to just, and then I started, I mean, obviously it was first as drinking and smoking, and then I started getting, in those days it was still something to smoke dope, really. It was illegal. So it was actually, it was still cool to do it, you know. And so I then, not only the guy that smoked it, so my nickname was Boom at some stage, but not only that, but I was trying to be the guy then that actually finds from dealers and sell it. Not because I had a business plan or anything like that. It just simply to stay and be accepted and be the cool guy around. And in my grade 11 years, there was a little bit of a meeting between me and my parents and the teachers of the school. I was in a school in the city, and there was like a discussion and thinking, and they just discussed and thinking, look, the city is not good for me. It's probably better for me to leave that school, all right? And so what they did in those days, if a guy was not yet kicked out, they had a simple way of sending to a school in the country. Like where there's just no temptation. And they had me all the way sending me to a school in the country. I'll tell you the town. So I say it, if I say it in Afrikaans, it just sounds so great. Mooriesburg, okay? So here again, you know, I'm thinking, I was, like I said, you know, I thought like I was pretty up there in the school in the city. If I would go to a school in the country, being as streetwise as I am, it would be a matter of time, and I mean, it will be a walk in the park. It will be a breeze. I mean, the town will probably be named after me. That's where I was thinking, you know. And so I went to that school, And I don't know how many people come from the country, or actually that town, but it just didn't fly. They didn't think I was cool. I was kind of just, yeah, it's one of those Cape kids, you know, just, and no one regarded me. I felt like I'm pretty low on this ladder, and I need to reassess where I'm at here. And so I reassessed, looked around, and who's the guys that's really cool around here? It's the jocks, right? It's the rugby guys. And so I thought, like, well, I've got a little bit of rugby talent. Maybe I must just give rugby a real shot. And maybe I can work my way up again. And so in my beginning of my matric year, I set my gaze that I want to play Craven Week rugby. Right? And so things went pretty well, actually, and I got to a final trial where I was in the Boland region, and we played against Western Province. It's the final trial. And I remember before that game, again, that feeling, if only, surely, I would arrive. And I played that game, and I played pretty well, you know, but it was one of those, you're never sure, you know, you're never sure. And so that Monday morning, a friend of mine somehow found out what the teams are. He walked up to me before school started. He walked up to me, he shook my hand, and he said, congratulations. You're in the first 15 of Boland, man. You're going to play Craven Week. And it was again, yes. Yes. You know, it was good, it was great, it was everything that I hoped for, but somehow, somewhere, it just still left me empty. It's like there's that elusive joy, that elusive peace, that thing that I want to settle me, somewhere there, it was still bugging me, it was still not there, you know. And so I finished school. There was this girl also there in the mix that I really wanted as well. And then when I finally got her, I thought this will be it. Then it was the whole thing how to keep her. It was just it's the thing with the pretty girls, you know. It's like you get them and then how to keep them. And so my heart just never settled. My heart just never settled. It just never offered me what I thought it would. And so I got an opportunity. I got a bursary to come to Stellenbosch. By the way, my academic marks changed a little bit when I was in the country. I actually had good enough marks to come and study BC with engineering subjects. I wanted to be an engineer, right? For a short moment. And I got a bursary, a rugby bursary, that covered my fees. Here at Stellenbosch. It was, let's see, I come back to Stellenbosch and I just, it's the connection with the old friends and all those things happen again. And somehow, you know, I by that time have realized rugby just didn't do it for me. So I've got a bursary to play rugby at Stellenbosch. I went to one rugby practice and I never went to a rugby practice again. Just somehow my social schedule and the rugby just it clashed, you know. And that year, although I entered BC engineering, that's all that I did. People say, what did you study? No, I didn't study. I failed so badly that I was kicked out of this university. I couldn't be here. And in this pursuit of somehow just thrills and happiness, you know, everything started falling apart for me, really. And by the age of 22, if there were still dreams, it probably weren't around anymore. There wasn't really dreams anymore of what I want. And probably my life's vision at the age of 22 would be something like this. I want to live till 30. So I'm going to party as hard as I can till 30. I hope by then it will be the end. Because there's just nothing for me after that. And so really living from that, from one place to another in regards to this. And then at the age of 22, a couple of friends went to Cape Town, and we took a drug called acid or LSD, and we took it, and we would roam around in the streets of Cape Town, just enjoy the scenery. And as we were, it took like, I think, 40 to 45 minutes to start kicking in. And as it was getting, as we were going on, you know, me and my friends kind of come to the conclusion, this is maybe not going to be good enough. We need more. All right. So we went to my one friend, he knew a dealer at a certain club. We went to the club. The club's name was Get a Fix. All right. So we went to Get a Fix. We went to Get a Fix, and my one friend went up to go and get the dealer. Well, me and my other friend are waiting outside. So usually outside of a club, like 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it was, there's a bit of activity going around outside of this club. So we're just obviously waiting, sitting around, waiting for the person to come. And as we're waiting, I see a guy and a girl standing around there. But I mean, if I say they look out of place, I mean, they look really out of place. But I, by this time, is not sure because I'm starting to trip. So I don't know. It's just like maybe I'm just seeing some stuff, but you know, and usually when I was getting, when I was on acid, I was not really able to converse with strangers. So I know I'm still looking at this guy and girl, and I'm thinking, who are you? What are you doing here? I hope you won't speak to me. And the next moment, they kind of pickle towards us, and I see they're trying to make conversation with us. So what I'm thinking is, I know these guys. So what you would have outside of these clubs is people would want to get buy drugs. And then sometimes what you can do is you will help them, but you will put on some profit, you know. So I was thinking, well, maybe I can make some money out of them. So I can see they're trying to, and I'm like, listen, I can help you guys. What do you want? No, I mean, like this is morning hours. I'm busy tripping on acid here. This is... And they like, it was this. No, we just want to speak to you about Jesus. And I'm telling you, like, off, or like whatever morning hours it was, outside of a club while you're tripping on acid, that's the last thing that you want to converse about. Chats on Jesus, you know. So but like I said, I grew up in a Christian home, and somehow I felt obliged to defend Christianity. I was Christian by name and that type of thing. So I was taught some of the basic principles. And still I felt like whenever I was confronted, I would say I'm a Christian. And so when these people were saying to me, I don't want to be rude. I was kind of enough respect in me for people like that. And I won't just leave. I don't want to speak about Jesus, that type of thing. I was trying actually, felt the need to convince them that I'm a Christian. So I said to him, look, yeah, I mean, I know Jesus died for my sins and stuff, but they didn't believe me, you know. So as I'm trying to convince them, my friend comes down with the drug dealer. So now the drug dealer is standing here. The Christian worker is standing there, and I'm trying to make both parties happier. While I'm tripping on acid, you know. So it becomes very difficult. And it was, in some ways, I felt like it was displaying my life. And I had to choose somebody. We had to choose somebody to leave, and we chose the Christian worker. So we said, listen, we're fine. Just leave. And my one friend says, yeah, why are you speaking to us? We're really fine. In fact, if you go around the corner there, you will find people that's worse off than us. So maybe just go there. And the guy and the girl, the guy still then wanted to go in, and the girl kind of just quieted him down, you know, the wisdom of the lady. She just quieted him down. She looked straight at, it felt like me, but just let's say us, looked at us and said, like, well, the reason why we're speaking to you guys is because God sent us to you. Now, you know, these type of things people say all the time. You know, the Dominie said it every Sunday. God gave me a message for you and that type of thing. But when she said, God sent us to you, it hit me so hard that I knew somehow in my little belief of who God is and that He existed, that He was after me, and you sent them to me. And it struck me so hard. And they left. We took the asset. We tripped even more. But even as I was going through that whole experience of tripping and having what I had, I could not get it out of my mind. God send them to you. God send them to you. God send them to you. And so we can finish. And that Monday morning, a friend of mine, his dad, organized me a job, you know. And so my boss will always give me a lift back home after work. Now, like I could say to you, honestly, me and my boss were not having like the smashing relationship or anything like that. It was not like we were chatting. In fact, I was always just sitting in his bucky waiting for him to drop me. It was simple. And this Monday morning, I'm sitting in this car again just waiting for him to drop me. But as I'm sitting in his bucky that Monday afternoon, in my mind, it is going, God, send them to you. I'm processing, considering it. Yeah, is this real? All this type of things. And as I'm thinking about it, like I said, me and my boss never spoke. Suddenly my boss turns to me. Stop the robot or something. He turns to me. He said, so Carl, do you know Jesus? And So I said something that I, up till today, think it was one of the bravest things that I said, and that probably changed it for me. I said, no. See, up till that time, even though I would have been confronted by it, I was like, I'm a Christian, meaning I grew up in that home and that type of things. But I, by that time, now realize that there's something different of actually being whatever they have there. There's some reality there versus what I had in regards to just carrying this name. And whatever he was confronting or speaking to me, I did not have. And I, for the first time, acknowledged it and said, no, I don't. I don't. I don't know. And he said, look, this is completely fine, you know. And he invited me to church. And there's a little church in the town, Wellington, that's just close by. And so that Sunday morning, I went to church with my boss. And it was a small meeting, like 40, 50 people. And there's a few things that stood out for me as I stepped into the room. The first thing that stood out for me is this was a church meeting, and there was happy people inside of it. I've never seen that before. I've never seen happy people in a church meeting. And just it was like, wow. And they seem to have a contentness and a happiness that I've never seen before. The second thing that stood out for me is, see, I grew up actually quite a liberal, politically liberal home. So politically liberal in the 90s is probably a little bit different than it was now. I mean, in that time, it was just my parents was pretty much against apartheid. And I grew up with that type of heart that was embedded in me. And so I remember in the 90s as New South Africa came, one of the things that we would love to philosophize about was how to make the country one, right? And one of the things that I would say in my deep state of philosophy was there is no law that can ever make people one, you know? I've kind of come to realize that. No ideology that seems to really could be able to make people one. Now, my boss, I knew my boss and I knew his family. He was one of the richest prominent families in the Cape in that time. He's dead. I was at the house. It's serious. And when I walked in with him into that meeting, he went to go worship. You know, as you saw people stand in front, he went to stand inside, and next to him stood a farm worker. Well, looked like someone that could be a farm worker. And when they worshiped there, I was standing there now looking like, this is what I've always been dreaming for. There's a oneness here that I've never seen before. And it really struck me. And so then the worship started, right, as you guys had today. And for me, I this is the first time, actually, there was a little bit of a beat. So I after a while, started, you know, hey, man, this is a little bit different than church. And then I actually got into it a little bit, you know. I was like, yeah, I can do this, you know. And at one moment, the guy that was leading the worship, as you saw Sonika did, He shouted out, If anybody wants more of God in his life, just jump. Again, I was not thinking, it was not a move that I was planning to do, but the next moment, I'm jumping. And I'm jumping and I'm thinking to myself, what on earth are you doing, man? You know, you're going to become like these guys. Stop. And then as that happened, I don't think he even saw me doing it. But he just suddenly, he just stopped. The worship just stopped. Just went dead quiet. And then he pointed me out. Now, that pointing out was a fearful pointing out. Because I, for 22 years up till that time, look, it's not that I didn't have things my way. I'm not one of those cases of an abandoned child, had nothing going for him, and on the dumps, God pulled him out. No, I couldn't say that of myself. I had an awesome parents, family, loved me, cared for me. It was not like we were underprivileged, not that we didn't have provision. We had more than enough. It was not that I didn't have talents and things going for me. I had everything going my way. And after 22 years, I was doing all the talking, and after 22 years, my life was a mess. It felt like everything that God gave me, everything that was offered me, I just shoved it right back into His face. And for 22 years, I did the talking, and it felt like for 22 years, God was waiting, and now it's His turn. And when He pointed me out, I was like, I was so scared. Because it's God's turn now. That's how it felt for me. It was one of those moments in my life. Okay, now it's my turn. And God said, and the guy said, God just saw you jump. And He likes it. I'm like right now as I'm standing here, I'm still hungover. I'm a little bit stoned. I'm the one that messed up all those times. No, it's wrong address here. Can't be. But something, as He said that, something in my eyes, something in my heart just broke. And the way that I saw God up till that time just changed. And for the first time, something of who He is, realizing that He's a God of love, realizing His desire for me, just, I don't know, I can't explain it, but I just saw it. And then he continues, like, and the Lord is saying, if you are willing to step out and give your life to Him today, He's going to transform it and change it. And so it seems like a pretty no-brainer. I mean, life was anyway pretty messed up. And so I did that. I gave my life to the Lord. And I can honestly tell you guys, it's an understatement, turning my life upside down. It transformed my life completely. And I was able to experience a life that I could never in my wildest dream come up with. Imagine the type of relationships, the type of families, the places that He took me. Even he then decided to use me. It's just crazy, crazy. I could never, never imagine it. But guess what, guys? I still some days feel like not everybody loves me. I still feel sometimes I haven't achieved enough in life. But I can honestly tell you, I wake up every morning and I can say, yes, yes, yes. I'm a satisfied man. I'm a man full of joy. I'm a man full of peace. And if the question is, have you arrived? I have come to understand that have you arrived will never happen. It's like a dog chasing his tail. It will never happen. But arrival is not found in what you achieve and what you accomplish and what you experience. Arrival is found in the person Jesus Christ. I've arrived. Because it's the person Jesus Christ. So filled up and satisfied. Even though life still throws his curveballs, something deep inside of me can go, yes, yes, yes. I found the reason. I found the reason that we were created to stand in a relationship with God in Christ Jesus. And if you don't have that, no matter what you achieve, I mean, you can be Bill Gates, you would never, never, never be satisfied. I recently watched these old movies with my wife, and there's this old movie, Chariots of Fire. It's the story of the 1920s Olympic Games where there's two athletes. The one athlete is a born-again believer, and he's wrestling of whether he should go to the Olympics or going to the mission field. And suddenly he realizes that God wants him to run, actually. But he doesn't run the Olympics because somehow at the end of it, there would be his goal, his satisfaction. He would be complete as a human. He run because he's already complete. He's already full of God, full of joy. The only reason why he runs is out of obedience to God. Running an Olympic medal offers him nothing. He's free from it. It follows the story of another man. His whole life and his whole destiny is wrapped up in this Olympics, in this finding and winning this Olympic gold medal. He's cut off everything, and this will be it. This will be the thing for him. And then just before the race, this final Olympic race, an hour before the finals, he says something. He says, I have feared this moment more than anything else in life. What if I don't make it? What if the very thing that I found reason and purpose is not achieved? But I found a greater fear. So powerful. I found a greater fear. What if I actually win it? And I realize it's not it. And he actually won it. And he walked away there, an unhappy, unfulfilled man, because even an Olympic gold medal couldn't do it for him. I'm fully appreciating that in this room, we are all so different, you know. We all have different things that float our boats, you know. When I was 11, I wanted to be popular. I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be something. You in here, he's like, that's not my thing. I wanted to just, I don't know, achieve, get 10 A's or something like that. And boring, but bless you. You know, but I want to be the last guy that go like, I know you. Let me tell you something about you. I know how much it irritates me. You can say, no, you don't know me. And that's fair enough. You know, I would stand in front of a painting and I would just see, you know, paint on a canvas. My wife or some other person can go and see, it's amazing, just the lighting and how they, and I just don't see that. It just doesn't do it for me, you know. I would look at a cricket shot and go like, whoa, that was majestic, beautiful. My wife go like, there we go. It's exactly, you know. We're just so different. Some love people, and when you love people, you cannot understand a person that doesn't love people. I mean, I'm speaking now, extrovert, introvert, we all should love people somewhere. But there's some feelings and some experiences that all of us have in common. You don't eat for 5 days, you're going to be hungry, no matter who you are, right? If I say, I've got this feeling when I don't eat called hunger, I don't know if you guys ever experienced this, you know, something very unique to me. No, it's not. All of you know what I mean when I say hunger. All of you know what it means to be thirsty. I take drink from you for a day, you're going to be thirsty. If I say thirsty, you go like, yeah, we understand one another. Because all of us here's body has been created in the same way. You need food to sustain it. You need drink to sustain it. Here's my bold statement. All of you in this room, understand the experience that I just explained. All of you understand it. All of you know how it feels at times when the very thing that you wanted, you get it or you don't get it, and it's yes. All of you know what it means to be unfulfilled, no matter what you achieve, no matter who you are. All of you know what it means to be that elusive joy. All of you know what it means that I just don't feel or know what it means to say I have arrived. All of you here knows it. All of you. I'm bold. I'm saying it. I don't care if you're extrovert, introvert, charismatic, non-charismatic. All of you have that experience. Because as, listen to this, as your body needs food, as your body needs drink, so you, every person in here, have been created to stand in relationship with Jesus. All of you have been created for that. And all of you will still search and not be fulfilled until you come to that person. I can honestly say, you know, I don't know a lot of answers. If I maybe studied a little bit harder in that first year, I could have been like some of these engineers and just like have the answers. I don't have all the answers, but I know the answer. I know the answer to all mankind. I know the desire of the nations. I know the thing that you are seeking for. I know it. With 100% confidence, I stand here today and I say, I know it. I know the answer. It's not a thing. It's not an experience. It's a person. And that person's name is Jesus. And unless you come to Him, the emptiness and the desire will remain. Let's pray.